And we're here on the K&M Podcast. Ken Brown from WGR Radio. Michael here, DetroitLions.com, talking Lions football. Hello, Mike.
Hello there, Ken Brown. What do we got going today?
Well, T-minus 3 weeks left until the NFL draft, and we're going to get that in a second with a special guest we have on, Scott Bischoff, in a minute. But first, I just want to go through a couple of things that have happened in the last week. Brock Wright, the offer sheet was matched with the San Francisco 49ers. I'm not going to get into it. I guess you can it will average probably $3 million a year. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a good signing. I mean, you've had him for a couple of years. He fits your offense. He fits your schemes. He produces. He helps your running game. Why let him go and then start all over, try to find somebody to take his place? I thought it was the right move to do.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to find a guy that can get you 13 catches a year, so I understand how they had to give him $3 million a year.
But that's not all he does, Kenny. Be fair. He's a good blocker in the running game.
I can get a blocker for half the price. I can get a block if that's all it is for half the price. I'm not going to say good or bad because, you know, you're building a team, but I just think that it's a move that, it's up to you. I'm just either way with Brock Wright. He's a third tight end, second tight end, depending on how you figure Mitchell. But, you know, they decide to keep him. I guess giving him to San Francisco wouldn't help if you're trying to overtake San Francisco. So I'm fine with it. But 13 catches on the front of 13 catches, that can be replaced. That's all I got to say.
Also, but there's more to it. He's a good blocker. Look, he's been in that system. Like I said, why change?
All right, fine. Let's find out. But there is a salary cap. There is a salary cap, and we have to be mindful of it, especially when you're about to pay a quarterback and a receiver top-end money. But if you got it, spend it. I'm all for it. All right, big things have happened today, too, and this will go into our draft talk about building teams. A lot of people in the last 24 hours or so have seen the way Houston is building their team, the Texans, by getting Stephon Diggs. They went out and got, Danielle Hunter. They got a lot of big money players to go along with their team to build it. They've had a big renaissance in the last 2 years. They've gone from, like, bottom of the barrel to, you know, Super Bowl contender now, according to some people. The Lions have gone about it a different way. They've, you know, basically built by the draft, you know, built with their own homegrown players, may add a piece here or there, but not a major, major piece. Is there any wrong way of either way we're building these teams?
Well, I would consider the quarterback a major piece in the trade they made with Matthew Stafford for him to go to the Rams and Jared to come here to Detroit and be their starting quarterback. So I would consider that, Kenny, a major piece, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would consider that a piece on that trade. But you know what I'm saying about high-end free agents to not getting high-end free agents. I think that's where people's discrepancies come in because the Lions did not go out with the money they had and spend enormously on one player like a lot of people thought they were going to do.
No, I agree with that. And that's, you know, to me, if it works, it works. If it works, then he did the right thing. And I think so far they've made the right moves. And I have, for that reason, I have faith in the front office, the coaching staff, that they're going to, you know, develop and procure the players that fits what they're doing, including in the draft, not just the draft, but also in free agency. Was it spectacular what they did in free agency? No. It certainly was in the draft, and I don't think they'll be able to replicate that anytime soon because of where they're going to be drafting from now on. But I understand exactly what people think they want to. No, they want the big show. You know, they want the big splash, and there's nothing wrong with that. But there's also nothing wrong with what the Lions have done so far. The proof is in the one loss record.
All right. Well, we'll see how it turns out. Well, speaking of draft, I could talk to you all day about the draft, but why when I can go get some experts to talk about it? You know, why should I have to talk to you about it when I can go find somebody that can help us out here on our draft beat? And matter of fact, as soon as I bring our guests in, we have Scott Bischoff on, a friend of the show, has been on us on draft day coverage on JR. He has the Detroit Lions podcast now, but it's very, very good. And Scott is one of my leading authorities on the draft, former scout. Scott Bischoff, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. If I'm one of your leading authorities, you need to find new people.
Well, I'm looking all the time. As you see with Mike, I'm looking all the time for the next thing. But I'm just, you know, I'm loyal, so I'm keeping Mike with us. Mike O'Hara.
Thanks for having me on, guys. It's good to join you.
I want to tell both of you guys something immediately, though. I drove by downtown yesterday, if the NFL is not king, they're building like a little city down there. I guess the NFL pays for this, Mike. You can clue me on this if I'm not right. But the amphitheater they're building for this draft, I thought they were just going to have, you know, something like bring some risers out or whatever, put up a little facade to look good for TV. But, Mike, they are building something down there, and the NFL evidently pays for this.
Well, Kenny, you thought this was going to be sort of like the Thanksgiving Day parade with the
Put the little bleachers out, and, you know, have a little false facade where, you know, everything looks real. That's money they're putting in down there.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, your reaction there, I think, tells us that we should never let you judge anything again. And I'll leave it at that.
Well, I'm telling you right now, people, this is going to be an adventure. I don't know how to look at it because it's never happened before where a draft has come to town. And usually the draft has been in Radio City Music Hall in New York, and they've just moved it the last few years. But I think this is going to be a one-of-a-kind experience for people that – you know, are listening to us now. You can go down there and view it on TV. I think this could be a really, really great event.
You know, and it wouldn't surprise me, and this is not inside information or anything like that. It's just I just thought of this, Kenny, talking to you. I wouldn't be surprised if they left it standing for a while just to let people come down and enjoy it. In other words, the draft will be over on a Saturday afternoon. So leave it up for another week or two and let the people come down and enjoy it.
All right.
I understand there are probably traffic, you know, flow and stuff like that that would be might work against it, but it's something, if it's what everything we think it is, and I'm sure it is, it's probably more, then let's just leave it up a while.
All right, don't do like you did Tiger Stadium in the Silverdome, though. Don't just leave it up for, like, you know, 15, 20 years.
A couple of weeks is fine,
but you know how we do stuff around here, Mike. We'll have, you know, they still talk about diverters playing. So they leave stuff up around here forever.
Like the Silverdome. Let them people come by and take it away a piece by piece.
That's right. Well, Scott, draft time is coming. The checker pieces are being moved. The chessboard is being moved around now. My first question to you, Scott. How many quarterbacks in the first five picks?
Oh, boy. Three.
And the three?
So I think right now I would write it in pen almost, if there's even a point where you can do that. But Caleb Williams at one. Jaden Daniels, I think, is pretty set at two. Not 100%, but pretty set at two. And then, you know, Do the Patriots want to take a quarterback? If they do, my assumption is Drake May might be a kind of a prototype Patriots pick. McCarthy might be too, but there's multiple opportunities for teams to come into say New England wants to trade out. I would say the Vikings would love to get up to that spot, or even the Broncos would like to get up there. Maybe the Raiders want to do something like that. So I don't know that there'll be four. There was some discussion about the first four picks being quarterbacks, which I think is, I mean, I suppose, Mike, I don't know what you're hearing, but, you know, that's tough, and I don't think that's ever happened. So I would say three, and it's kind of a guess, but I think three is where it's at.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you something about when you mentioned J.J. McCarthy. You know, yeah. Daniel Jeremiah, I think, does great work for, you know, NFL.com and all his other endeavors there. He's got him going to whoever at number three or four, I forget which. But in his top 50, he ranks him as 20th or 21st among all players. How can you just explain how a guy could? And I think there's nothing wrong about what he's doing. It's just kind of curious to me. Maybe you could explain it better than I can. That why he could be projected on one hand to go, you know, third or fourth off the board, and another one, he's the 20th best player. Is that just the value of quarterbacks?
It's the value of quarterbacks, and it leads into the Houston conversation about what they're able to do with a quarterback on a rookie deal. I do think that, you know, I mean, the quarterback is the most important position in football, and I mean, it doesn't make sense that a player you have going fourth is your 20th or whatever it is. But I understand what he's saying. The need is so great, and there's quarterback issues almost everywhere in the NFL. So if you can find one who is a moderate-level starter who's got I mean, I think McCarthy has some pretty high-end traits, and there's some off the field that you love with him. He's, you know, he's a winner, and you know, the mental makeup, all that stuff, the ability to see the game and what defenses are trying to do. He just doesn't have the high-end crazy production that's that, you know, like Jaden Daniels did last year at LSU, or that Caleb Williams had, you know, 2 years ago at USC. You know, I would take, I know you guys didn't ask, but I'll tell you anyway. I would take McCarthy over May. There's some issues with the way with May's game that are just awkward and strange, you know, especially at North Carolina. But I mean, I understand what Daniel Jeremiah is doing with that ranking. You might have higher ranked receivers. You might have some tackles and a couple defensive players and some corners who might be better prospects, but don't mean as much to the success of a team as a quarterback, if that makes sense.
Sure, exactly. Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to throw something in here, and Scott, you've been doing this for a while, and you've been doing this at least last year and this year for sure. I know that for a fact. Study these quarterbacks that are coming into the draft. I got a question. This may be way off the box. If Hendon Hooker is in this draft this year and didn't have the ACL, where does he rank in those top five quarterbacks? I'm including Penix as the fifth one.
That's a really good question. He's older. I mean, that's one of the things about Jaden Daniels is he's a touch older. To be going, you know, I think it's pretty – Schefter had him going to the Commanders today at two, and I think Schefter's had some information on the Commanders in front of everybody else in the recent past where we should probably be paying attention to what he's saying. Boy, that's a good question. I'm trying to buy a little time. I would probably have him fourth or fifth, to be honest with you, behind a bunch of the players in front of him. I would have him behind McCarthy. I'd have him behind Williams. I think Hooker's the offense at Tennessee was really gimmicky. There was a lot of option routes, a lot of downfield throwing. He took a lot of sacks. I know he's very athletic. He's got high upside as a player. It's just from a standpoint of being able to come in and read progressions and coverages and take advantage of defenses in a traditional manner, I'm not sure that he would be above players like McCarthy or Daniels in some ways. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think he would probably be fifth. And I think he might be, truthfully, he may even be behind Michael Penix and Bo Nix in that regard. Yeah. And I know that those are older players too.
Right.
So they're in similar, like, those guys have been around forever.
Right.
I mean, Penix was at Indiana for like 3 years.
Right.
You know,
the reason I'm asking that is because I was talking to Mike about this, who told me I was crazy. I'm going to give you my presentation. If the Lions are planning on signing Goff to an extension, and I'm assuming can we all agree that that's what they plan on doing, assuming they're going to do it. And Hooker's 26 years old. I would put him on the block and then draft a younger quarterback for development, because there's no sense keeping him. If Goff's going to be your quarterback the next 3 years, there's no sense trying to think I'm going to have a 29-year-old starter if I'm done with Goff then. And Goff will still only be 33 or 34 years old or whatever, depending on how long the extension is. I don't see a sense of keeping him if I can get something for him. If I can't get anything for him, I'm keeping him. But I would put him and that 29th pick into this equation and try to trade to move up. That's what I would do.
What do you think that you could – I guess the question is, what are you going to get for him?
Well, the three quarterbacks are taken the way you said. Say Denver is out of the loop or Minnesota's out of the loop and they can't get a quarterback. If I can trade my 29th pick and Hooker and move up into that, you know, that first Minnesota pick or the Denver pick, I'd do it.
I think we would all do it, but I don't know that that's even remotely reasonable, given that all of those teams passed on him multiple times last year
because of the injury. That's what I'm saying. But he's had 1 year of healing now, and he's healthy, and he's you know, practiced with the team the last year. To me, going into this season, even though he didn't play a drop, he has a year of pro coaching with him. I think he's farther ahead than maybe not the top three, but the next three.
He could be. I just there's nothing. I don't know that there's any evidence to prove that he is.
Right, there's no evidence to prove. But this, I'm just saying these are off the box thinking of things that the Lions could do to move up, and that's all I was trying to say. And then I got another one.
one of the greatest robberies in draft history, if that happens.
It might be. And I got another. Well, let's get to the draft. I'll give my other scenario in a minute. But
can I just interject something?
Yes,
here?
Go ahead. I know you're about to say something about me, Mike. Go ahead.
When I heard the word remotely, I had a hard time to continue listening. But, Kenny, in all honesty, I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's something to think about. I think he's just a little bit outside the whatever the line of demarcation you'd have for something like that. I think he's a little bit outside of it. I think he's got more football in him than we might think he does.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I love him as a player, but and like I said, he'll show himself this year in preseason or whatever, and then you'll either know he's a player, and then he'll really have value, or you got a good backup, and you don't have to worry about the starter gets hurt. So these are just things I'm putting out there.
You're right, though, in terms of it was a confusing, kind of a strange pick in the third round last year for them to take him, given his age, injury, and if they really truly believed in Goff and were going to extend him or planned on extending him, it is a confusing sort of suspicious kind of pick. Like he's just going to ride the pine. And there's value in having a high-end backup. I mean, that's one of the things in the NFL that doesn't exist. There aren't high-end backups in the NFL. It's just his age. Like you said, he's going to be 28, 29 years old, maybe 28. I think 28 when his contract is up. And in a perfect world, he'll really rarely have taken a snap for you.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, and I think that makes sense. I think you might be able to get, you may be able to get like a third or fourth round pick for him. But right. Jumping up all those spots in round one, I don't think that's likely to happen.
But again, Denver, look what Denver's starting, Stidham. I mean, the guys get desperate after those guys are gone. That's all. But I don't want to stay too far on that because I want to get back to the Lions pick. 29th pick, you've seen the way the Lions approach free agency. They pretty much have every starting position covered now. You may have a discrepancy on cornerback, maybe. But going into this 29th pick now, and with the way the board looks like it's falling through the early mocks, who do you think will be there player-wise or position-wise? What do you think the highest position will be of need for them to get that will be there at 29?
Well, I think they've done a pretty awesome job of eliminating the idea that they have to address a certain position at 29. So, having said that, I think there are some positions that stand out as positions that I would think that they should, but there isn't anybody alive who would have told you last year that they were going to take a running back and a inside backer in round one. You know what I mean? They're just so they're prone to do whatever it is that they want to do. And then this year, this specific year, I think it's more wide open than it has been in the past. But to me, their issues are, I think they need a left guard or an interior offensive lineman, preferably a player that can play center too, because Ragnow's injuries are stacking up, and you just never know, right? Ragnow's an elite center, but with those injuries and all that stuff piling up, you just don't know when the end is going to come for him. It's not obviously now, but right. Preparing for that is smart. So I think you need somebody who can step in and play left guard. Kevin Zeitler is going to play right guard for you. Graham Glasgow, I believe, can play on the left side, but he's your backup center in the short term, and maybe what I would consider to be a very reliable backup player at three positions. So in a perfect world, you address the left guard position and good to go. But Holmes is going to do what Holmes wants to do, and I think he's going to just take the best player that falls there. But so the O-line, I think edge is a position of need, giving them a big, powerful pass rusher to pair with Hutchinson makes some sense. Obviously, with some of the stuff that's going on this offseason, cornerback is a need. I don't know if they're going to do anything at 29. At corner, they seem to want to find those guys a little bit later. And sneakily, I think wide receiver is a bit of a need. So those are the four positions I think are needs. That doesn't mean that's where they go, but those are the ones that I think stand out the most. I don't know if there's agreement on that or if maybe there's another position that you guys think, but those are the four I think.
Mike, what do you? Where would you go?
Well, Kenny, I'd go for wide receiver or cornerback, whichever was the better player. And if there was somebody else who, you know, dramatically stood out higher than those two, I think that's the player I would take. But if all things are, you know, fairly even, it would either be the top wide receiver or the top cornerback on the draft. I just wonder one thing, though, with what's happened to the Buffalo Bills lately in drafting at 28, they might be going after the same players that the Lions are.
Exactly.
And one pick ahead of them. So I think that's, I don't know if it's that big a deal, one pick, especially deep in the first round of the draft, but it might be for what, you know, the Lions are always looking to change spots up or down. They might be more inclined now to make a move to go up a little bit to get in front of the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, and that I think that, you know, the Bills are going to take a receiver by the way it looks. I would expect them to go receiver in round one. And if there's a player that the Lions covet, it's just a question of are they targeting the same type? And I don't know. I'm not sure if they are, but still, point remains that they have the opportunity to jump up a few spots if they want to. And I agree, you know, if there's a corner that's out there who they have ranked very highly who falls to you, yeah, I would imagine that would be the pick. But in this particular class, there's a couple of corners who really fit them well who are going to be, say, second, third-round players, and maybe that's the wheelhouse for where, the corner position gets addressed. Chris Abrams Drain from Missouri is one of those guys who I think fits really well with what the Lions do. Certainly not at 29, but in round two or round three would be a very nice pick. Round two, I would say, is about where he goes. He was at the Senior Bowl. He looked really good.
Yeah, I agree with that. They can get a corner in the second for what they want to do a third. But that first pick to me should be a person that probably, because you never say with rookies what they're going to do, will contribute a lot this year. And I think even the corner they draft the second and third, we like Slay his first year, where you're not going to play a lot. You know, Slay got benched his first year, whatever, and then he became the player he did in the subsequent years. And that's the way you want to bring him along slow. This is my thing. They need an X receiver. I'm sorry. They need a big X receiver, and I've been telling Mike this. Mike, I think, you agree with me. They can get, you know, those jump balls in the corner, and they just open that offense up at the end. DJ Chark was kind of that player of the year before. I know for the money they paid him, he didn't produce that much because he was hurt, whatever. But that type of 6'4 guy or whatever, I got a feeling that's the same thing Buffalo's going for. Like the Brian Thomas or the Donna Mitchell out of Texas, those guys. I would have said Xavier Leggett until he measured like 3 inches shorter than what they had him listed at. He's still a big guy, but he's not 6'3 anymore.
He's not 6'3, but at 6'1 and 220 and with the athletic profile, he's a pretty intriguing player. You're right. You're right about the X receiver stuff. DJ Chark was one of the guys they tried. They tried Breshad Perriman. They tried Tyrell Williams. Josh Reynolds kind of fits in that mold too. These are the more linear, fast guys. And I think I don't know in this draft. I mean, there are receivers who really fit what the Lions do on offense. And I know that, you know, we're talking big X kind of outside guy, but to me, that player needs to be a pretty efficient route runner too.
It sounds like you talking Ladd McConkey.
Well,
it sounds like you talking Ladd McConkey. I
mean, that's fine, but not necessarily him. There's others where, you know, I could see them. So this is a Goff thing. Goff likes receivers who are exactly where they're supposed to be. They have to be trustworthy. They have to get to their landmarks. They have to, all that stuff. And then they earn his trust, and then, you know, he'll throw to them. But there are times, this is where I think the Jameson stuff is at times, is that he's not super, super efficient with the way he runs routes. And there's a little disconnect in the two of them. So if you go back to Goff with the Rams, I think you look at Cooper Kupp, the way he runs routes, Robert Woods, the way he ran routes. They brought in that speed element in Brandon Cooks. They gave up a couple first-round picks to try to make that work. And it's just Goff is very picky about the kind of receivers that he likes to throw to, and they absolutely need to be reliable route runners. Right. So I
the
think
Cooks thing didn't work, did it?
No. Yeah, no, it didn't necessarily. I mean, I think it helped them, you know, get to
Super Bowl that one time, but it didn't work.
Super Bowl,
yeah, numbers didn't equate for what they gave up for them. And then they got rid of them after.
I just think that as much as we want to talk about big backside, you know, big outside receivers, they do need to be able to run routes well. So I think you'd be looking at Ricky Pearsall from Florida is a guy like that. Not at pick 29, but you know he's an intriguing route runner. He's a really good player. Roman Wilson, same kind of a thing, but he's small. So you know that's the problem is that some of the super reliable route runners are the smaller players in the class. You know it's going to be interesting to see what they do, but yeah, I mean I'm with Mike. Whoever the best available player is at a relative position of need should be the pick at 29.
I agree. And if they go, Mike, I told you about this earlier. I don't know if you agree with me or not. If they do a defensive end or pass rusher on the other side, it's the quicker type more than the Davenport guy they got now that they would be looking for. You agree with that?
Yeah, I can't believe I'm agreeing with you, but I guess I better. No, I think you're absolutely right, Kenny, and get somebody who can get off the like that and before – they can react, and he's on the quarterback's back by the time they realize he's even made a move.
Yeah.
I think another guy with some speed on the defensive line is would be a real asset for the Detroit Lions.
And Scott, I don't know how you feel about this, but if they draft Chop Robinson, I may walk out of the state. I mean, not drive out of the state, walk out of the state. And I'm gonna tell you why, and tell me if I'm wrong, because you researched this more than me. With a guy like that has Michael Parsons type numbers, his combine numbers or his, you know, pre-draft numbers, don't he have 4 sacks in a season? And he's not really a big sack guy. He doesn't produce. He's you know, he looks good and the numbers are there, but I don't see the production.
No, I'm 100%. He is the one player that I don't know that they would be interested in. From just the standpoint of when you get your when an offensive lineman gets his hands on Chop Robinson, the rep is generally speaking over. He does not use his hands well. He doesn't play physical. He doesn't run through contact. There are moments where he just is happy getting blocked. Now this is a guy who probably has the best first step in the entire draft from a defensive end standpoint. He is electric the way he gets off the ball with his first step. But he does not have great hands. He's not a physical player. I don't know that there's a lot of physicality in the way he defends the run either. So I'm not sure that they would really be all that interested in him as a player because it's, you know, how do you get a player's competitiveness dialed up? I don't know. I don't know how you do that.
No, we're beyond that now. They're going for a championship.
You know, Kenny, it kind of reminds me a little bit, I think we've talked about this before, of Trayvon Walker, who was jumped ahead of Hutchinson as the number one pick 2 years ago, but really never had the production. Great athlete and all that, but, you know, I'm not going to say, you know, no runs, no hits, no errors, but it's just, I don't think it ever warranted the move they made and that Jaguars did.
No, I agree.
Agreed. Yeah, and it just seemed like they fell in love with big, fast, physical player, and he was. He was a big, fast, physical player, just not super productive in that Georgia defense. Chop is fast, but not all that productive.
Yeah.
You know, and then even the sacks, some of the sacks are against lesser competition. I mean, if you watch him like last year play against Ohio State, which is where you would expect him to want to bring it, right? You got Paris Johnson Jr. and DeJuan Jones, both were pretty early picks. Paris Johnson was a first-round pick. And he just, like, there's nothing that happened in that game for him. He just got locked up in that game. Mike, I don't know what you think, but I think Ken's on to something about walking out of the state. He would not be alone.
I'm walking. And Mike knows I walk. Okay, I'm going to give you two more players to bring up, Mike and Scott. I'm bringing you these two players. Tell me what you think about them in their chance, because these are players that have somehow been linked to the Lions, too, by different draft analysts, like Jim Miller and Pat on his on NFL Network Radio. Right. They had a mock draft. They had Brandon Fisk from Florida State going number one, who was a Western Michigan player that transferred to Florida State. And in the first round, Scott, you know more than me. Now, he's got everything that Dan Campbell likes, you know, aggressiveness, the whole thing, hard player, plays all the time. He's the exact opposite of Chop Robinson. But is he a first-rounder?
No. I don't think he is a first-rounder. I think in round two, fine. We're talking about a player with very short arms. Very athletic. He had a really good Senior Bowl, very tough to block. But, Mike, have you been down to the Senior Bowl?
I went once when Bobby Ross was hired. That's how long ago it's been.
They do these drills, these one-on-one drills, and it's really set up for the defensive player to win because it's one-on-one, and they allow the defensive player to go as wide as he wants to defeat like a guard, right? So he's like a three-technique defensive tackle who widens 3 or 4 or 5 yards, and it's like there's no way he's going to be able to loop that far to then, you know, bend and turn around this guy. This is not how football is played. But so he was hard to block in the one-on-ones there. I think he was a bit of the real pretty name coming out of the Senior Bowl. Obviously a very explosive player, high motor, all that stuff. Yes, he reeks Detroit Lions, but not in round one. No.
I agree. And finally, my last player, wide receiver, big, ex-receiver, Keon Coleman, yeah. Florida State. Didn't run great at all. I'm just wondering, are we looking at Mike Williams, or are we looking at just a guy that doesn't run fast that can produce at the pro level?
Isn't he 6'4", and he ran 4.44?
He ran a 4.61 at the combine.
Okay. Well,
yeah, he's 6'3", and 213 pounds. To me, you are looking at a Kenny Galladay-like player who wins with the ball in the air, not necessarily because of the way he runs routes or generates separation with his feet. It's more separating with the ball in the air. I don't think I don't want to say he's great with the ball in the air either, because there are some drops and there are some, you know, contested catches where, you know, I mean, he should come down with those plays, but. Every once in a while, he'll make an above-the-rim kind of a play where you think, wow, that's impressive. The question then becomes, does a quarterback like Jared Goff ever give him an opportunity to make a play in the contested catch game when that's not at all what Jared Goff does at all?
Mm.
And I would say he doesn't really fit as a prototype for what the Lions do on offense, because he's not efficient as a route runner, and the quarterback doesn't like to put the ball into dangerous places where – a guy like Stafford would Keon Coleman would be great for a guy like Matt Stafford.
Yeah,
he would, but not for Jared Goff.
What round do you see him?
I think he'll be a round two player.
Two player, okay. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say one thing about Matthew Stafford that we saw here. Interceptions don't bother him. For him, it's just another out. That's all. We'll be back next time.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think he's right about that too.
Yeah.
I do too, and it just takes a certain kind of mentality to play like that. You know, I mean, there are other receivers in that profile, like Brendan Rice from USC, I think is a better fit for what.
Is that
Goff
the GOAT's
does.
Son?
Yes.
That's Jerry Rice's son. Okay. Is he a big receiver?
He's like 6'2 and 210 pounds. He's fast enough. I don't think he's crazy fast, but he runs good routes. He ran 4.5. So
faster than his father.
I think he's a better fit. Just a pure fit for what the Lions do. And this is why I'm kind of pushing off of potentially wide receiver in round one, because I think it takes a specific type.
You know, Scott, we pushed every position off of round one to round two.
I know.
Every player is a second round player. So, you know what?
Maybe they're trading down into round two.
I was just about to say, Mike, maybe what the deal might be better if you get a couple of second round picks and give up that first.
Well, I don't
the
know
other
about
thing
that.
Too
but
is,
the one thing about it, if you're drafting at number 29, there's really not a big difference between that and drafting in the second round. It'd be high in the second round. You're getting the same player, basically, I would think.
Yes. Yeah, you are.
If that makes any sense.
It does, and then they have a huge – the one thing that I think people need to really pay attention to is between – I want to say it's pick 73 and pick 164, the Lions don't make a selection. Or is it 73 and 164? It's one of those two.
They don't have a fourth rounder. Like, yeah, they go from all the way from. Matter of fact, I got that list right here. They go
like
all the way down.
Picks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that knowing what Brad Holmes does, which is hit on players in the draft, I think they're going to want to try to fill that void with a pick or two, and the only way you can do that is either to give up futures or to move back. So is it possible that we see them make a move back from 29 into, the say, maybe the early 40s and then fill that void? Maybe. I mean, that would not be a sexy way to go about business. But with what Brad Holmes has done in the draft, it would be a smart move. Don't know that that's what they'll do, but we'll see.
See, I'm going to go the other way on you, too. I think that the way they've done in free agency and their roster from last year, that they don't need a bunch of draft picks. I think I would like to get two or three quality guys, and I could call it a night. So maybe moving up and getting rid of some of those picks to get players higher so you can be done and get more quality players rather than moving down to get more players. So I can see him going either way with this because, like I said, rookies are going to make the team?
But they've been successful with quantity and quality in the first three drafts, and why change it?
You got a deeper team coming into the draft, which they've never had. How many rookies are going to make the team? The way it is now without injury, you're talking about maybe four players at the most that are going to make the squad.
I mean, you've got to develop the bottom parts of your roster and make that part of your roster more competitive.
Yeah.
And
if you do that, then you've got maybe a Malcolm Rodriguez who makes a crucial interception for you in the playoffs.
I'm not arguing. I agree with what you're saying. Right. I'm just saying Malcolm Rodriguez coming into this roster, he might not have got a chance. He was a six-rounder on a bad roster, so he got a chance to play. But coming in on a deep roster already, does he make the team?
Well, if they see with ability the things it takes to play the positions, I think they give you a chance, and you get a chance to show out.
Okay, I'm just putting it out there.
No, it's not what you're saying is not a bad. It's not bad at all. That's possible.
No.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
what
I mean, that's the thing with where they are is anything is possible.
Yeah. Now this is my last thing before we close out, and I'm sorry I had to put this out there. And Scott, you kind of it's your fault what I'm about to say because you kind of brought this up. I've been telling Mike that I think they should put Jameson Williams on the block if they could get a move up and get another receiver, move up and get a better pick or whatever, because of what you said about him and Goff going together. And my question to both of you, are we building this team with Goff in mind? Are we building this, offense specifically with Goff in mind? Are we building this offense with, to get players that can play any system? Because like you said, Scott, players Goff might like and play with could be different than if, XYZ is the quarterback. So, Mike, what do you think about that? And Jameson Williams, to me, I think he'd be, put it like this. Let me say this. Buffalo, Carolina, teams that would covet him and may probably be their number one receiver right now, I'd try to see what I could get for him. That's just me talking.
Well, I'm not drafting for Carolina with that other team that you mentioned, so I'm not going to give it an awful lot of thought. Look, I think what he needs as much as anything is a full season of football at the Detroit Lions for the first time in 3 years, and he'll get it this year, and we'll have this conversation next year, and maybe it might be more valid. It's not. It's better than some of your other ideas, Kenny. I'll give you that.
It is worth a discussion.
And I mean,
if you could have a team wow you, because I think there's still a lot of value out there. I think the league views him as a very valuable player.
Let me just add one more thing. When I started covering the Detroit Lions in 1977, the motto was you win on defense, and it was that for a long time. But that is flipped, and you win with offense now. You've got to be able to move the ball. You've got to be able to score in a hurry when you want to and when you have to. And you got to keep, if you don't do that, you're going to be watching teams just sail off into the sunset.
No argument. But as I said, I'm going to say what I told you off the air. I'm going to say this, Scott, now. Jameson Williams is option four and closer to five than three. Because if you want to go by it, LaPorta, St. Brown, and I could say Gibbs is third option. And
maybe, but I think there's a function in which a way they could use a player like Jameson Williams in which he would be incredibly dynamic. And that's a little more in the short throwing game. Think slants and crossing routes, where his speed to run to the sidelines is outmatches anybody.
No, that's true.
And I know that they want to use him in the vertical passing game, and I think that, I mean, obviously you would. You'd want to try that. But But I think Mike is hinting at the idea that sometimes it's easy as just handing, just giving him a sweep, right? Like, here's a jet sweep to Jameson Williams or a reverse, and boom, he's in the end zone. We saw it in the in the NFC title game that it's lightning in a bottle with him. And I just don't think giving away a player like who gives that to you makes sense unless you're getting significant return in which you're replacing that guy. Right. So that's kind of the thing. That's where I would be with it. But I mean, it's an interesting thought. I mean, it's definitely more interesting than the first one you brought up, Ken.
Hey, that's what I'm here for, people. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up this week. Scott, I want you to join us again sometime before the draft. I love when you come on with us, man. I appreciate
anytime.
You coming on. Go to YouTube, and get Detroit Lions podcast. Check out Scott on there. Who's your partner again, Scott?
Russ Brown. It's
Russ
Brown.
They got a lot of good draft stuff there. Go check him out over there. He's got good stuff. And Scott, like I said, he's been on with JR with us all the time, and he's a great guy. Thanks, Scott, for coming on with us today. I really appreciate it.
Anytime, and anytime you want to do it again, I'm available.
All right. Mike O'Hare, I'm going to deal with you next week. I don't like you agreeing with me, then all of a sudden now you turned on me. Now you turned on me again.
I understand. Hendon Hooker has tears in his eyes. Monkey's right. And you
want to
get rid of
them. All right, Mike, we're going to do another one next week as it's closer to the draft. I'm getting excited now. You know, when April Fool's Day comes, you know, it's really draft time. I'm really excited about what's going on. I hope you are, too. And it should be a fun next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And I'll leave it at that.
All right. That's Michael here at DetroitLions.com. Check him out on his website and his podcast and all the other stuff. Check us out here on DetroitLions.com. The Mitch Albom Show on WJR Radio, where I'm at. We're always going to have some draft talk up to the annual draft, and we're going to have a great time in the next few weeks. Thanks for listening this afternoon.